All right, so we're here as we are every Wednesday night at the moment for Triple Play Sports Pub with Phil Tucker and Elijah Jacobs and myself, Kenny Mann. And you know, it's been a big week again in sports. We last left off with the NCAA tournament and whatnot, and we'll get into all of that as we go. But we start our show with our leadoff double headlines that Phil Tucker provides.
Well, college basketball is a good place to start, as of course the big news this week: John Calipari chose to leave Kentucky on his own terms instead of waiting to see what happens next season, as he has taken the open coaching job at Arkansas. So after the first round tournament exit, Kentucky had announced that they were going to stick by Calipari, but he said, you know, maybe this is a good time for me to hit the road.
Mm-hmm. He's making more money. He's got less pressure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I like John Calipari, but it's kind of we're all making him out to be the saint now. Oh, he's doing this for Kentucky. He's doing it for him. He's getting a job.
He's doing it for him so he doesn't get fired.
And it doesn't look bad. But, you know, I agree that he and them need a change. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've mentioned this. He adopted early the one-and-done stuff, but now it's not working.
No.
So he's just either doing it wrong or he's not doing the portal correctly, but it's easier to get it right at Arkansas with less pressure.
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is a win-win for both sides. I think Kentucky, you know, doesn't have him anymore and doesn't have to answer to a fan base that is probably rabid, like, hey, why the heck is this guy still here when he's not being successful?
Yeah.
And it's good for Calipari that he doesn't have to probably deal himself with that rabid fan base, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think this is a win-win for both sides.
Yeah, I mean, look, whoever takes over, you know, it's the same. Mm-hmm. Kentucky fan base.
Yeah.
They want to win. They want to win yesterday. Listen,
they don't have a big football's not the thing when you think about Kentucky.
Of course
it's
not.
Basketball.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, so looking at the contract, it looks like his base salary is actually a little bit less than it was at Kentucky. He took a little bit of a pay cut.
Okay.
But there's a lot of incentives in there as far as, you know, the course signing bonus, which it's odd because you don't really hear that with the coaches getting the signing bonus. So basically he could make as much as he makes at Kentucky if he's successful there, which...
Shockingly, I think he is going to be successful because, like you said, there's not the added pressure of being Kentucky. Like you have to represent. You know, I think he's going to do well there.
Yeah, I wish him well. Like I said, I like him. I know he's been unsuccessful lately, but I do like the guy. He wears his heart on his sleeve, so to speak. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, and to me, with Calipari, it seems like you know where you stand.
Yeah, that's a good point, because a lot of these basketball coaches, you don't know where you stand. And as you've said, Kenny, there's a few that you consider used car salesmen.
A lot of them are, though.
Whereas
a
lot of them, he's going to tell you exactly what he is.
But he's a used car salesman that tells you. That's what I like. You know, he'll say, this car, you know, the window's broke, or this car, this doesn't work. I'd rather that. Just tell me, let me know. I'm happy if you tell me. Don't let me find out.
He's going to tell you, okay, this car is going to break down in a year.
Right. But at least
I know. But that year, you are going to have a lot of fun with
it. That's right. I'm happy with that.
So, of course, the Iowa South Carolina game on Monday night averaged 18.7 million viewers, peaking at 24 million. Most watched basketball game at any level since 2019 for the NCAA men's championship game between Virginia and Texas Tech. Basically, the only thing that's beat it in the last few years has been NFL and college football.
Wow.
And World Cup.
You know, that's not a surprise. I mean, that was the story. I mean, we talked about this. The story just wasn't there with Connecticut and Purdue, whereas here, the story was here. I mean, Caitlin Clark playing this seemingly invincible opponent, and that's what you got. The best player playing the best team. And it was entertaining. I mean, it came out, you know, it was a very entertaining game. Caitlin Clark came out swinging.
18 points the first quarter.
But you could just tell that team wore her out.
Oh, yeah.
They just wore her out,
absolutely,
wore her down.
They're huge. Mm-hmm. They're huge. South Carolina, they're huge.
Well, they're, I think she's the center. Cardoza.
Oh, my gosh.
6'7".
Yeah, gosh.
That's a huge woman.
I will talk about the men also, but I felt like these were very parallel. You know, you had Zach Edey with Purdue, and you had Caitlin Clark with Iowa, and they gave it their best shot. They both did, and they were the two. You know, obviously Caitlin Clark was, but even Zach Edey has become a name during this tournament, and they were the two put it all on my shoulders players, and they, to give them both credit, they both did everything they really could.
Yeah,
but they both came across teams that were much better and deeper. And you know, and again, here in sports, more than likely one person is not going to beat a team, and in this case that's what happened. But you know,
to their credit,
they were incredible, both of them.
They gave both those teams everything they wanted for a period of time, but you could just tell after a while Edey and Caitlin Clark they wore down.
Yeah, well, and to me, I think the biggest difference for the Iowa South Carolina game, I mean, South Carolina out-rebounded them 51-29.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the killer for them. Iowa got nothing from their bench.
Yeah, it was 37-0 at one point. I don't know how it ended, the bench.
I think that was the total bench points, 37 bench points to nothing. I mean, and that's...
no help.
You know, one megastar player like that can lift a team... But there's a certain point where it's like you have to admit, okay, this person's not going to be able to do everything.
Yeah.
If they don't get any help at all from their team, they're not going to win.
I think Caitlin Clark had the better shot at doing it because I think the way she plays, she can hit threes, she can set people up. Edey, the game plan literally was there. All right, you know what? We're going to let you dominate in the paint. And we don't care because we're just not going to let the rest of your team do anything. And that's exactly what
happened. What they did.
Well, I ended up not watching the entire game of UConn-Purdue. After a while, I was kind of like, okay, this game's getting out of hand.
Yeah.
But the thing that stuck out to me the most was, even though he ended up with 10 rebounds, when I look at Zach Edey, I'm thinking, how are you not getting more rebounds than that when you are that much taller?
Yeah,
than well, all but they, one player. UConn
has the one dude there that was battling him, but you know they shot 1 of 7 from three. You know, going over to the men's bracket here,
and that was one. The highest one. If I'm not mistaken, Purdue going into that game
with the second highest shooting team in the nation, and they get one. So, like Elijah said, they Hurley said, Let Edey score. Don't let anyone else score. And that's what they did. Caitlin Clark, I think she should stay. I know it's crazy, but this decision isn't in cement. I think she should stay one more year in Iowa. I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, ESPN should write a check. Like Phil just said with these numbers. Here's $3 million, $4 million, $10 million. Stay.
Yeah,
we're going to broadcast, and it's going to be amazing. There's no way in the WNBA, I don't think, that the eyes are going to be on the sets like they were for this. And she will elevate, you know, the league for a bit and all that, but I think it'll wane after a year, and you know, it's going to be a little different, but...
yeah.
It would be amazing to do this again next year, one more time.
Absolutely. Well,
to me, what helps with the draw of this is you're seeing, you know, arguably one of the greatest women player of all time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In a tournament that every game matters. Whereas you get to the playoffs in the WNBA, the NBA, you know, everything else. If you have a bad game, okay, you still have a couple more chances.
Right.
You know, as long as you don't blow it, you can't string together three bad games. But, you know, you have a couple chances to win and beat each team that you're facing. The intensity of this, and I mean, going into that game, that's such a huge story. You have either best college basketball player going and getting a championship. Yeah. Or you have a team going 38-0.
I
mean, talk about a storyline that just feeds right into everything you want out of sports.
There will be no game, I'll guarantee this, in the WNBA. I don't care who's playing, whether it's Caitlin Clark against the girl from LSU.
Angel Reese.
It doesn't matter. They will not surpass the numbers Phil just said earlier. Those are numbers that beat every sport for the last almost 4 years other than the NFL. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen.
No.
But if she stayed in Iowa, I don't care who they play. Come next tournament, that excitement is going to be up there again, and everyone's going to want to see, can Caitlin Clark get the ring and that quest? And again, I know she said she made the decision. She's going, I wouldn't be blown away, shocked if in the next month or two you heard, you know what? We've changed our mind. We're going to stay in Iowa and try and finish this job.
Yeah. It's because as long as she has not already signed with an agent,
right,
which I don't think she could until after these games were over, you know, she can change her mind.
Yes.
Until she's signed, she can change her mind. And
financially, yeah, like you said,
if I was
ESPN,
I would be calling up saying, hey,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Name your number.
Yeah.
Come back.
How much would do we have to give you to get you to stay? How much do we have to sponsor you for?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Good luck to her if she goes and if she stays and whatnot. To the men's, obviously, that's where we were going to head anyway. But yeah, I mean, look, Zach Edey, he did all he could. I mentioned it earlier. The guy was incredible. UConn is ridiculously good. Ridiculously good. And they were the better team, you know, by far.
And now you got to look at something here. UConn has had 6 championships in 25 years.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, because when I think of basketball, college basketball, Connecticut's never been a team that has it come off as one of the blue bloods. It's not a team you think about. I mean, I always think Duke, North Carolina, those are the two that
Kansas. Yes.
Kansas,
and now
Kentucky.
It's UConn. I mean, that's just the way it is. They're the best team right now out there. And you want to add the women in there. My God, there's no school that comes close to basketball
Absolutely.
Than UConn.
Yeah. I would, you know, I wish I'd have thought to look this up while I was writing my notes for the show. I'm curious how many total championships they have between men's and women's basketball. And if there's any school that's anywhere close to them.
I think UCLA had a lot back in the
day. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to guess with the women's end of that. But, you know, yeah, I mean, UCLA had a lot of men's, and as did Kentucky and Kansas and Duke. But they're amazing. And now it looks like, you know, Hurley is staying. They're going to try to three-peat. That would be unbelievable. I've never even heard of such a thing in college basketball, not in my lifetime.
I mean, you would think of like those old John Wooden UCLA teams. If you're going to think of, a team that would have three-peated.
Not in the modern era.
Modern era, no.
And that's incredible. And that's kind of cool that now he's going to be there and give that a shot. And look, they were just by far. I will say, look, the women's tournament was much more exciting. There's no doubt. The men's tournament was absolutely boring. I mean, there were no buzzer beaters. Yeah. There were no games that you came away other than NC State making that little, you know, statement run. There was really no moment that we were going, oh, my God, did you see this shot? And it just did this, and it changed.
I mean, the only games to me that were exciting were the upsets.
Yeah, and they just weren't a lot.
When Wisconsin fell to, was it Grand Canyon?
Grand Canyon, yeah.
And
Kentucky losing to Oakland. But, I mean.
Outside of that, I mean, even the championship game to me was not that entertaining.
It was not. The Final Four wasn't. It really wasn't. One of the better games was actually Tennessee and Purdue.
Yeah,
which really ended up being an entertaining game. But for the most part, the tournament was. Yeah, it was a one versus a one, and the defending one won. It was really nothing, oh my God, about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been more entertaining. I think it would have been a better story if Purdue had managed to punch through, and it was because Zach Edey had some Herculean performance, like 45, 50 points.
He would have
something.
Needed 60 the way UConn decided to play the game. But, I mean, look, hopefully next year the tournament's a little more exciting. I feel like it was almost an afterthought. By the Sweet 16, I was like, all right, UConn's probably going to win.
Yeah, I mean, when Gonzaga didn't knock out Purdue, when Tennessee got knocked out by Purdue, I was like, I'm not really.
Yeah. All right.
It is, but between the women and the men at Connecticut, they have 17 championships.
Okay.
But I think UCLA has 25, believe.
Okay.
But I think it's all the men's, though, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, all right. Well, then.
Yeah.
Back in that earlier day when they were just a powerhouse.
Yeah. What I would say is how they compare in the modern age.
Because nobody.
You look at that era when UCLA was so dominant. It's a very different college landscape than even 20, 25 years ago. But, yeah, I mean, it was, to me, I think my only disappointment with the South Carolina and Iowa game was just that it didn't come down to a little bit closer at the end. You know, because it seemed like every time Iowa would start to kind of make a run.
Yeah.
And they then all of a sudden, down. South Carolina would just put the kibosh on it and get right back out there again.
Correction, UCLA has 11. I'm sorry. I was wrong about that. UCLA has 11. I thought...
You said 25.
Well,
Where'd
I was...
you get 25?
I got 25 because it's been 25 years since I think they won
one. So UConn does have the most men's and women's?
I believe so. I mean,
well, there you go.
Because I don't think UCLA's women have won that much. I can look it up real quick.
I think they may have won one or two because there was an article about the 10 undefeated women's teams.
Gotcha.
Now, only five of them are... from when it was NCAA sanctioned.
Right.
So that's the other thing with the women's side of it is it's only been since the early 80s that the NCAA records are there.
Right.
So the fact that UConn women have won that many...
is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much up until, about maybe 10 years ago, it was either UConn or Tennessee.
Yeah.
You thought women's basketball, you thought of UConn
and
Tennessee.
Pat Summitt and Gino Auriemma, and that's it. Yeah. And I mean, that's the way it went.
So taking a look a little bit at what's going on in the NHL as we're getting close to the end of the season. Preds clinched it last night. It wasn't pretty, but they got it done.
95 points, and they have a chance to get to 100. Not that they want that, but boy, if you would have told me at the beginning of the year, the Preds have a chance to get 100 points, I'd say you're out of your mind. This team is far overachieved. Far overachieved.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, and it's funny. So last night I watched basically the second period of the game, and then I switched back over because I had recorded the men's championship game. I watched the first half live, but with not starting until 8 o'clock, I was too tired Monday night to stay for the whole thing. So I watched the bits of the second half last night, and I tell you, I wish I'd left the Preds game on.
Yeah,
because that third period looked like a lot of excitement.
Yeah, and again, they've won so many different ways this year. They've had the streak, you know, that catapulted them to where they couldn't really get knocked out of this spot, and it's going to be very interesting to see, obviously, who they play, and that's a big deal. You know, matchups in the NHL is
styles make
everything.
Fights. Yeah,
yeah.
You don't want it now. Right now, they're either going to play Colorado, Vancouver, or Dallas. You don't want to play Colorado.
No,
no.
Especially right now.
I'd want Vancouver. Amazing.
You'd want to play Vancouver. With Dallas, you do have a little bit of a rivalry. That doesn't hurt. It's always, you know, it's okay. But gosh, I just hope that they're not matched with Colorado. That would be really, really difficult.
Yeah. Yes.
With the way they're playing, with the way McKinnon's playing. He just got up to 51 goals the other night, and it would be tough.
Well, and it's been such a weird stretch these last couple of games because when you look at the number of shots taken and everything else, it's like, man, they should be winning these games. Mm-hmm. But they just, I don't know, they've run into some goalies that have just...
Yeah, and that happens.
Like Hollebuck last night.
Yeah.
After the second period, it's like, I think Preds has shot like 35 times in the first two periods.
Well, he's up there this year, Connor Hellebuck. He's been fantastic. Austin Matthews, 66 goals now. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
He may get to 70. That is just ridiculous. Ovi, he was in one of my dude's mentions, but I can mention it. Over 30 goals now, and he now broke the record. He has 18 seasons of 30 or more goals. He broke the record of Mike Gardner. That is, when you think about it, 18 years alone to play is incredible. To do that and have 30 or more goals in all of those years, that's inhuman.
It is.
He's unbelievable. So then the other end of all this is, where do they stand? Well, everybody's got about 3 games left.
Yep, 3 or 4, yeah.
Yeah, Washington could get in. It's Washington, Pittsburgh, Detroit, and Philly for one spot, basically, in the East, and Vegas and St. Louis for the spot in the West, with Vegas has a bit of a hand up there.
Yeah, so it's funny. So in the East, you have the Islanders, Capitals, Penguins, Red Wings, and Flyers, all within four points of each other, with most of them having 6 possible points left in the season.
Mm-hmm.
The Islanders are the scarier.
I don't think they're going to do anything.
They're hot right now.
I know, but I just think they missed their opportunity.
But they're streaky, though. They're the streaky one.
And again, we mentioned this with the Preds, with Colorado, having to play Colorado. On the other end of that is, you know, if you're one of the 1-2 seeds, you don't want to play Washington. You don't want Ovechkin for 7 games or 4 games or 5, whatever it is. And you probably don't want Pittsburgh with Malkin and Crosby. You know, these you don't want to see those kind of players in playoffs. So, you know, they'd rather see a Detroit or a Philly, one of those guys. So we'll see where it goes. But it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And this is a season that everything's coming down these last couple games. You know, in the West, I mean, there's 2 or 3 teams right now. It's like, okay, who's going to get the third spot in the West? Who's going to get the second wild card spot? The first wild card, you know. There's a lot of juggling around to go in there.
Yeah. I wonder, though, Phil, if the Edmonton Oilers will make the playoffs. I just wonder. You know, because it's so touch and go.
You knew this was coming, Elijah.
It's so touch and go. Oh, wait, what? They're like 30 points in already?
You know what?
Oh, it's
you
just
know
so, what? Oh, they can't make the playoffs. They lost 4 whole games. How can they make the playoffs?
Let's see what they do in the playoffs.
Are we going for the bet?
We're not going for the bet. I don't bet anymore because the reality is whenever I actually put a bet to this, it backfires. So I'll just say this. Until Connor McJames Harden, that's going to be my name for him because, yeah, he's great regular season.
I think I'm going to have you spell that in pepperoni on my pizza.
Fine. You know what? I'll proudly order my own pizza and eat it when McDavid is knocked out of the playoffs because it's coming.
You don't want to make that bet? You're so certain. You're so certain.
I mean, I just say.
Do you want to know how you guarantee they do get knocked out of the playoffs?
If I bet on it.
Bet on them.
Bet on them staying in it.
There you go. You know what? The one thing I will say as we wrap up the NHL, this has been one of the more exciting NHL seasons for the offense. We mentioned all these players that are, you know, McDavid had a heck of a season. McKinnon has been incredible.
And Matthews
with 66 goals.
And you know, what about Kucherov having a phenomenal season?
Everybody just out there, it's just been fantastic. It really has been good for the NHL. You know, offense brings eyes to the TVs, and it's really been great. So hopefully that continues now in the playoffs.
Well, one thing I'm unhappy about and the way this is shaping up is my favorite team is going to end up going against the team. If it stays the way it is, my favorite team is going to end up going against the team I picked to win the Stanley Cup. So I'm going Carolina and Tampa Bay by the looks of it.
Who's your favorite team?
I like Tampa Bay.
Wait a minute, and let's go back here. Who likes Tampa Bay?
I do.
You or some family that you know?
No, me. Oh, okay. No, she hates Tampa Bay. Don't even bring Tampa Bay up. Like,
okay.
I even told her I wanted to take her to a Lightning game, and I was going to make her wear a Predators jersey, and I'm going to wear a Vasilevsky jersey. So no. She's the Predators fan. She hates the Lightning.
Well, it's going to be an exciting playoffs. I mean, if it's anything like the regular season has been, it's going to be a real exciting playoffs, and these players, you know, going to be great.
Yeah. And we're a little over a week away.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see how that all shakes out and see who the Preds face. Hopefully we'll know after this weekend, I would think, or maybe early next week.
You might,
we'll know. Good time for us to go to our dudes and duds for the week.
All right.
I'll make it easy for me. I'll give you, it's Zach Edey. And again, it's more about his tournament. He was remarkable. You know, he really was. The guy carried that Purdue yeah. team. He literally carried them on his shoulders. And he came up a little short, but it wasn't, again, we mentioned, it wasn't for his shortcomings. He, you know, they did everything they could to stop everyone else, and they did. And he's remarkable. I wonder if it's going to translate to the NBA. I don't know. But I got to give him the credit that what a tournament.
He is a physical player.
7'4".
But I'm just saying, for a big guy, he actually is not afraid to get physical. And I think there's always a spot for somebody like that.
You know,
that
it's funny. 30 years ago, this wasn't even a question. This guy would have been drafted one or two. It was like a Patrick Ewing thing. You know, oh my God, a big center coming out of college. Everyone wanted one. But we'll see. But Zach Edey, and then Ovi was my honorable. Go ahead.
It's funny, Ovechkin was one of my honorables too, but for me, I actually wrote three. So Don Staley, I mean, gosh, having the undefeated season with South Carolina and taking down Caitlin Clark in the final game was incredible. And Philip Grubauer, who was on my dud a couple weeks ago, has a shutout on 39 shots. So.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm going to give mine to, and I hate to do it because of the team he plays for, but the Reds shortstop, Ellie De La Cruz, going 3-for-4 with 2 home runs. By the way, one of them was an in-the-park home run in Cincinnati's 10-8 win over the Brewers on Monday. And that wasn't one of those, you know, error-filled in-the-park home runs. That was a...
He legged it out.
That was when it just hit just the right spot where by the time a fielder could even get to it, he was at third base. I mean, that was... The replay of it, it's worth watching. It's a lot of fun. So, of course, and then we have to do our duds.
Well, I'm going to jump out here. It goes to two goalies for the same team.
Hmm.
The starter and the backup. For the Philadelphia Flyers, Ivan Fedotov, I think is his name. I don't know.
When you do goalies. Go ahead.
And then Samuel and Ivan, that's all I'll say. They combine.
Sammy and Ivan.
So they basically.
That's a good, TV show back in the 70s.
They allowed 9 goals on 30 shots combined. The Canadians beat them 9-3. The
Canadians are not good either.
Exactly. I sat here. I was watching this one on the screen. I'm like, man, these two guys stink.
So it wasn't like the Bruins put 9 on them?
No, it was the Canadians who put 9 on them. The starter and the backup it was terrible, absolutely terrible.
All right, mine goes to, I gave it to Edey for the dude. I'm giving the rest of the team the dud. 1 of 7, we mentioned it from 3, that they only shot 7 is odd. It's
well, they only shot like 2 in the first half.
Yeah, it's as if they didn't want to even try out there, and then to try and hit 1 of 7. The team really let him down, I feel.
Yeah,
I mean,
did.
Not that they would have won, but well, he got no help.
No, he didn't get any help. No.
And my honorable on that, I'll get to my honorable. Go ahead.
Okay. I hate to do it, but I got to give mine to Cubs pitchers Javier Assad, Jose Cuellas, and Luke Little. Combining to give up 7 runs on 5 hits, a walk, and an error in the 6th inning on the way to the Cubs blowing an 8-0 lead and a 9-8 loss to the Padres Monday night.
Okay.
All right. Well, I have an honorable also. I wanted to just throw this out here because I was really PO'd. The Bucks starting 5 against the Memphis Grizzlies, they allowed over 70 points in the paint to the backup what's left of the Memphis Grizzlies at home. I'm just sitting there like, you know, when you got 2 huge guys like Giannis and Brooke Lopez and you allow 70 points in the paint, that's pathetic.
All right, so my honorable goes to the Boston Celtics and Milwaukee Bucks for a game Tuesday night. This is almost hard to believe, but there was 2 free throws shot in the game. 2. It was a foul called whoever fouled Giannis. He missed one, by the way.
Yeah.
So in the game, that was it. There were no other fouls called.
Set the NBA record for the fewest combined few free throw attempts.
And now, why is it a dud? Well, it's a dud because the reason this happened is these teams combined to fire away 88 three-point attempts. So this game, and I didn't watch it, must have resembled an all-star game where they jog up the court, one pass, and heave it from 3 because no one touched no one for 48 minutes. I mean, it is remarkable. And the NBA wonders why women's college outrates them, why hockey is starting to outratings them. I mean, NBA needs to figure something out to fix this. This is unwatchable. Yeah.
So the funny thing is, the Celtics became the first team in NBA history not to shoot a free throw during an entire game.
Yeah.
The funniest thing was after the game, Doc Rivers says, I thought it was a physical game, and then they handed me the stat sheet. It's the NBA. You thought it was a physical game?
No one touched
I haven't
touched
seen a
anybody.
Physical game yeah. in the NBA in years.
Insanity. How does that happen? Did this game take an hour? What did the fans say? What were they there? And then it was like, okay, guys, 7 o'clock, well, 8 o'clock, we're out of here.
I think it's probably one of the fastest games.
My goodness.
And Giannis got hurt in this game,
he
by
did.
The way.
He didn't even play
the full
Achilles,
game. I mean, this was a disgusting game to watch.
I did see, luckily, they said the Achilles is okay.
Yeah, okay.
They're just calling it a calf strain, which that's a lucky break for them, because if he had torn his Achilles, they're done.
And who knows what ramifications that has for next season if that happens.
All right, so now we look at our three up, three down for the week. Three teams that we thought on the upswing, three on the downswing. I'll give you my ups. This is easy. I've got Boston on two of the spots, the Celtics and the Bruins. I mean, we're at the end of the season, both leagues. And the Bruins, oh, no, they lost all these players. Oh, no, they can't do it. Well, they're right there. Celtics have been just fantastic wire to wire. And I'm going to throw the Pirates in there. 9-3. How about the Pittsburgh Pirates?
Yeah. All right. I've got the New York Islanders 5 in a row fighting for that final spot. You know, they're on a little bit of a roll here. The Philadelphia 76ers. Hey, Joel Embiid's coming back. He's healthy. Like, this is not a team I want any piece of if I'm the Celtics or the Bucks. And UConn's men's basketball. I mean... Going for a three-peat, 2 in a row, and they're going for a three-peat. How about that?
All right. So mine, I'm going to give it to the Cleveland Guardians, 8-3 to start the season, first place in the AL Central. The Phoenix Suns, 7-3 in the last 10. They've moved up into that first non-play-in spot, so if they can finish it out like this, they won't have to play in the play-in tournament, which is always a good thing. And the Kansas City Royals, 5-game win streak. They've moved up to 7-4 on the season.
All righty. On the other side is the down. My down, it's the Milwaukee Bucks, 4-6 in their last 10. And then the injury. Let's hope that Giannis is okay. Not the way you want to head into the playoffs. Not playing very well. The Miami Marlins, 1-11.
Yes.
Very nice job by the Miami Marlins. And finally, Kentucky basketball. I mean, you know, they're really about as low as I can remember them being. In my lifetime, you know, another early exit, now the coach and them divorcing. It's just not a good time for Kentucky basketball.
All right. Well, so I've got a which is worse for you guys based off of yours.
Okay.
The team that is 1-11 or the team that lost to them for that game.
Well, who would that be?
The Mets.
Oh yeah, it was. I wasn't even doing that to get
oh,
to you.
Yeah,
that was,
sure. Just the glee in your eye, like.
Well, that glee is genuine in the moment, because when I thought about that earlier, I did not even think about the fact that it was the Mets.
Listen, okay, the Mets. Listen, I had no faith in the Mets this year. Okay, like, listen, we got fleeced by Justin Verlander. Okay, so that it is what it is. All right, my three down. Obviously, the Milwaukee Bucks. And I'm just going to add one final thing you didn't mention, Kenny.
Okay.
They have Doc Rivers as their coach.
Yeah, which
and
is
that's
not
all
looking
I'll say,
good.
Because, yeah. I mean, this is a choke artist, okay? The Philadelphia Flyers, 0-8, 8-game losing streak, and they're playing their way out of the NHL playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cleveland Cavaliers, 3-7, and just falling down the Eastern Conference down to the number 5. Hopefully they don't get into the play-in tournament themselves.
They could be out if they do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make it unanimous on my down, the Milwaukee Bucks. Same reasons, 4-6, and the Giannis injury, that's concerning. Even though they say it's just a calf strain, that's still with only a few games left in the regular season, that's not how you want to go into the playoffs. I've got the Colorado Rockies 3-9 to start the season. 12 games in, they've already been outscored by 33 runs.
Mm.
And the Washington Capitals, you know, they're hanging there in that spot.
Hanging.
But, you know, they're 4-4-2 in their last 10 games. And so now they're only a point ahead of the Penguins and Red Wings for that last spot. So they're in danger of going from a comfortable second wild card to playing for the last game of the season.
All right.
All right. This brings us up to our Bet the Farm picks for the week.
I'm not involved in this. I am not picking.
How'd we do, Phil?
Well, you had gone with the Rangers over the Red Wings on Friday for a win for you. The Bucks over the Raptors on Friday for Elijah. You like to curse these teams, don't you?
I don't understand this. It's like...
And now he's injured. You just can't help hurt.
It's why I don't want to pick anymore.
All right.
And I had gone with the Magic over the Hornets for my first loss of the season.
Uh-oh. Where do we stand?
I'm at 4-1. Kenny's at 3-2.
Okay.
And then there's Elijah.
And I was thinking,
who the banker has...
What am I, 1-4?
No, you've got two correct.
2-3.
So that brings us to this week. I'm going to go ahead and throw mine out there. It's time for me to start picking some baseball. I'm going to go with the Braves series over the Marlins this weekend.
Okay.
All right, I'm going with the 76ers over the Magic on Friday.
All right, I've got tomorrow, 11 a.m., the Braves over the Mets.
That's a guarantee.
11 a.m. Goodness.
You know, maybe that'll curse the Braves.
Listen, the Mets can't play when they're rested. Can you imagine when they just had breakfast?
you know what's going to make me laugh about all this? Because I already know the Mets are not making it in. But what if the Yankees don't make it in
also?
Wait,
do I hear another bet coming?
No.
Do I hear another,
I'm just saying,
another proclamation
I'm just saying,
about how the Yankees will not make the playoffs?
I have you guys in the playoffs. I'm just saying it'll be hilarious with you doing all this chirping over here if the Yankees don't get in either.
I'm not chirping. They're 10 and, by the way, they're 10-2. How are the Mets again?
I'm not comparing them. I'm just saying you just keep talking about my Mets. And
listen,
I go, you know.
The Mets will have their, you know, hurrah on Bobby Bonilla Day. We'll all celebrate the Mets. But for the time being, just enjoy the cellar.
You know how bad it is that my uncle calls me up in July to say happy Bobby Bonilla Day? And it's only because of you that he even knows about Bobby Bonilla Day.
Good. He should learn the history of the Mets.
All right. Well, we got some time left before we have a very special guest joining us.
I'll give you a couple of things quickly. The Masters is this weekend. This is the most fun you're going to have watching golf. Check it out if you haven't. Scotty Scheffler, number one in the world. John Rahm, Koepka, Rory. Tiger will be there. Phil will be there. They'll all be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. That starts tomorrow. And the question I had for you guys, one of the questions is, I mentioned the game the other night in the NBA and how horrifying that was. You're the commissioner. Tell me, how do you fix the NBA? What do you do? If I said you have all the power, whatever you decide will go, what could you do, drastic or not, to fix what we're watching?
I don't really know if it is.
I think I would have to drop the rule in the paint. What's it, the three-second rule?
Three-second rule.
A three-second violation.
Okay.
And move the three-point line back.
Back?
Which seems crazy to think that we'd have to do that, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, we moved the pitcher's mound up and right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, that's changed
height. I'm sorry, down.
Yeah, it's changed height several times, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as athletes get better and better at something... Sometimes you have to make changes. Maybe that's a good start. Move the three-point line back a hair or two.
I mean, because the thing is, if say they moved it back 6 inches, that doesn't seem like a lot.
But it'll do
but
something.
But when you're used to, you know, because you see a lot of guys, they shoot right at that line.
Kind of like moving the extra point, right?
Yeah.
You know, we took something that they became automatic at. Not that they're automatic at three-point shooting, but it's just... you know, they take so many because it's in their range. Maybe you move it a little out of their range. Maybe that helps. Elijah, what do you think? How do you fix the NBA?
I'm going to agree with Phil on moving the three-point line back. But I think another thing, I think they have to allow hand checking again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they need to allow defensive basketball to have more reign, because I think that's part of what is unentertaining, is it's just not... It looks like a highlight reel for both offensive sides of the ball. You just don't see a lot of physical defense. It's like you're so scared to even breathe on somebody because then guy flops and he, oh, it's a penalty and all this stuff. And I think if you allow some more physical play and more defensive play and move the three-point line back, I think that could help a lot of things out.
Yeah, I guess moving the three-point line is the easy answer here. I just don't know. I don't know how can you force, in a way, the game to move back inside? I know it sounds horrifyingly drastic, but wouldn't it be something if you made in the paint 3 points? I mean, can you imagine what you would see then?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean you'd see inside players again. You'd see big centers again trying to dominate. I don't know. What can you do to get play within that area again, because there's no play in there anymore.
Unless you have somebody like Nikola Jokic. He's the outlier in all of this, that as a center has mastered all aspects of how to play that position. I mean, he goes into the paint when he has to. He gets everybody involved.
But that's one player. I'm talking about, how do we fix this league? I mean, these games are becoming unwatchable.
Well, and I honestly don't really know. This goes back to the interview we had with Chris Spencer, where he just said, I think the problem you're having is you got a lot of players coming out of college that are not playing good basketball.
Yeah.
They're playing
1 year.
And they're playing highlight reel basketball, but they're not actually playing the fundamentals and learning all the fundamentals of how to play the game. And I think... I don't know how you actually fix that problem.
What about, and again, I'm the way I presented it to you guys is drastic. Tell me something drastic. Tell me something that, you know, you would go, oh, that's crazy. But maybe it's not. What about a minimum amount of passes per possession? Meaning you get the ball, you cross half court, there has to be a minimum of 3 passes before you can shoot.
I think the hard thing with that
is the transition.
The fast break.
I understood. Mm-hmm. Understood. You
know, and that's...
I know. I'm just... Again, I don't know
me,
where...
To me, I almost think maybe even a... You know, you have the 3-second violation in the paint. What about a 3-second violation for the ball outside of the 3-point line?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You know, once you've crossed that 3-point line, you have this much time that you can take it back out, and that's it.
How about, to piggyback that, how about if the ball goes within the three-point line, it cannot come back out?
That's a good one.
So
I like
if you make a pass that goes within the interior of the three-point line,
it has to stay there.
The rest of that possession must remain there. You cannot pass it back out for a three. Yeah. Now, I know these are crazy thoughts, but I don't know what else to do.
But the hard thing with that is when you look at...
How do you set somebody up for a three?
I don't know. I know.
You look at some of the more entertaining games that you saw in the college game where they're moving the ball around.
And then they kick it
out. They're kicking it out. But that, you know, they're not necessarily kicking out solely to take a three. They're kicking it out so that they can adjust their position to get this guy a chance to go running towards the hoop.
Yeah.
I think that's the hardest thing with it is...
Well... And I think another thing they've done that will actually help this league, and I think this is what you're going to see, that they've made it that you have to play a minimum of, is it 68 games to or 65 games to be eligible for MVP?
Yeah.
I think that's going to help the league, because I think you're going to see a lot less of this load management, which is another thing that I think has hurt the league overall, that you got guys, because let's be very honest about this. When it's NBA playoffs, those players play much differently than how they play night in, night out.
Yeah.
And it you actually see some pretty good basketball when you go to the playoffs. And it's like, How can you guys drastically take a step from the regular season to the playoffs like that? Because you're not trying in the regular season if you know you're going to be there.
Well, and the thing is, you know, this many years now that they've been doing so much of the load management, you'd think, oh, well, they're doing it because the injuries have come down. But to me,
they really haven't.
They get injured more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at what point do you think, oh, wait a minute, this is a bad idea for it to do this way? Honestly, I think really the game's not going to change, and I think I've said this before, until someone comes up with a defense that neutralizes that open three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got somebody that can neutralize what Steph Curry does, what these players do, then that forces the game back inside. But I don't think you can rule it out.
How about, again, I'm top of my head, how about if you had a maximum, like, you know, we have the pitch clock now.
Yeah.
What if you had a maximum number of threes that you can convert, not attempt, convert? Meaning, if the NBA says, all right, the maximum number is 15 in a game. And when you fill that column, that's it. That's it.
You can shoot them from back there, so, but they're just only worth two.
Yeah, it's worth two. And so if you want to strategize now, and it's the fourth quarter, and you go, we've already made 12, I want to save those three or something like that. The reason I'm coming up with these things is because this is crazy how bad the league has become.
Yeah.
You know, if they knew going in, all right, that's it. We hit our quota. We hit our 15. We have to play inside.
Yeah, I think it would bring a lot more strategy. That's actually a brilliant point. Like,
I'm brilliant.
Well, you are brilliant. Except when it comes to baseball.
All right. And guess what? The Triple Play Sports Pub welcomes a friend of the show. I'm going to say it. It's a friend of the show, right? It has to be. The voice of the Tennessee Titans.
Only a friend would subject themselves to this many times.
The voice of the Tennessee Titans joins us. Mike Keith, how are you, sir?
I'm very good and very glad to be with you.
Well, we're glad to have you, and we've been looking forward to this all week. Phil Tucker's here, Elijah Jacobs, myself, Kenny Mann, and again, we're joined by Mike Keith, voice of the Tennessee Titans. Last week, we had voice of the Nashville Predators on Pete Weber. Next week, we have to line up the voice of the Sounds, Phil.
I'll see if I can get a hold of Jeff Hamm.
Okay. All right. Mike, we're glad you're doing well. We really, really appreciate you joining us, as we always do. It's been a little while since we spoke to you. The last time we spoke to you was beginning of the Titans season. So that season, you know, a quick recap, you know, 6-11, and Mike Vrabel's out, and Brian Callahan is in. Just based on you being around the team, have you seen a different mindset, a different approach to things with Callahan than you did with Mike Vrabel in any way?
Well, I haven't seen much of Callahan in terms of approach yet. The players just got back this week.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't even seen him on the field with the players yet.
Okay.
They're very different people.
Yeah.
They're very different personalities. And I think from that standpoint, it is quite a change. And you know, Mike Vrabel is a very big person.
Yes.
He is a very big personality.
Yes.
I think he's a lot, in many ways, I think he's like a guy like Mike Ditka.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always going to have your attention no matter what your role is or what you're doing. And I like that from the standpoint that I enjoyed working with Mike Vrabel very much. And he was really a lot of fun, but you understood that. I mean, it was going to be his show. He was out front, and when he walked down the hall, you knew exactly who was coming down the hall. I mean, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Callahan's very different. He's quieter. He has a really good sense of humor. He's a very friendly guy. He's much more easygoing from the standpoint that he's kind of is a little more chill.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably
mm-hmm.
the way to say it. Vrabel was certainly much more intense at all times, whether he was in the cafeteria or on the practice field or on the sidelines. So we, you know, I haven't seen Brian Callahan get mad at anybody yet? You know, I haven't seen I haven't seen the team. I haven't seen the team screw up a drill yet, and seen the head coach's reaction. But what I will tell you about both of them that's very similar is they are very attention to detail people and very specific in what they want and what they like. I had a meeting with Coach Callahan about Titans Radio recently, and we had a great conversation about what his radio show is going to look like and his TV show and things like that. And I mean, he's just really an impressive guy, but a distinctly different personality than what is Mike Vrabel.
So the way you describe it, I think what would be a great sketch to have sometime is Mike Vrabel orders lunch.
I've seen him order lunch.
And intensely.
Give me the ham and cheese. Ham and cheese.
Well, I think the whole thing with Mike is that's how Mike's going all the time. And even if he's not meaning to sort of be that up-tempo all the time guy, he just is.
Yeah, and that's it's good. I mean, like you mentioned, Ditka. That's the way Ditka was. And look, I mean, the whole nation fell in love with Mike Ditka and the way he was, and that was fantastic to have that personality. It was refreshing.
Yeah, and I think, and I think Vrabes to our fan base was largely the same way.
Yeah,
I think, you know, when the announcement came out on the Tuesday that he was being let go, the reaction was pretty immediate.
Yeah,
and. Because I think there was always this sense about Mike that, okay, maybe he didn't like his call on third and one or the defense that he ran or whatever, but he was coach. And you knew he was the coach and you knew he was in charge. And I think there was always this part of everybody that you knew, in spite of the bluster sometimes, he's really a good guy.
Yeah, and you're right. And Mike, his personality, it was the everyman to me. I mean, and that's what I think was endearing, was that you looked at him, at least I did as a fan, that, you know, he's, you know, you almost pictured him at the bar next to you watching the game and with his reactions and the way he was. And I think that is what made him endearing to the fans.
And so Brian's persona is going to take a little time to get to know. Because Mike was so out front with his persona. I mean, because like I said, that's how Mike is all the time. And so if you thought you knew him from what you saw him on his TV show, you did.
Right.
Brian is probably more like most of us, that he's a little more level in personality. He's got an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. He's 39 years old, nearly 40. So, you know, a younger family, and he is truly an offensive coach. He was a quarterback throughout his career. He's an offensive coach. They tend to be a little more cerebral, but I'm really enjoying getting to know him as well, especially the sense of humor. He has a really, really good sense of humor. Doesn't take himself too seriously. And, it's to this point, it's been fun.
Well, that's it's great to hear, especially as a fan. I mean, I'm looking forward to the season and having an offensive coach. It's a change of pace for the way the Titans have played through the years. Right now, it's going to be pretty exciting. And it's more, like you said, Mike, that cerebral Mike McDaniels. You know, that seems to be the new trend in the NFL anyway, you know, with these type of coaches. All right, turning that page. Derrick Henry, you know, gone. That's another one where Titan fans, you know, very bittersweet goodbye, you know, not wanting to see that end, but yet understanding that all good things must end. He will be obviously a Tennessee Titan Hall of Famer in my estimation. And Will Levis is now going into a camp as, hey, here you go, kid, you are the starter. And I think that's going to make a big difference in his progress.
It will. And what we're going to do offensively is going to change. You know, I don't know if you ever read Mike Sando, who works for The Athletic now, really good writer. He came up with something called the Cook Index. Mm-hmm. And that is the percentage of times that you throw the football on first or second down in the first 28 minutes of a game.
Okay. Where ranked?
Last.
That's what I figured.
Yeah, we ranked last, and Cincinnati ranked fifth.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And so, and I think the Cook Index is a really good measuring stick based on the fact that two-minute drives at the end of each half, well, I mean, you're going to throw like every down then, so that skews it. And then you get into the second half of games, and score and situation can often dictate what you have to do. So the first 28 minutes of the game, in most cases, you're doing what you do. You are who you are in those moments. And we threw 45% of the time on first and second down, last in the league. The Bengals threw 56% of the time, fifth in the league. Mm. So that's going to be the change. I mean, we are going to be more throw first, and we'll see if that's a good thing. I mean, run first worked pretty well for 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it did okay, but the last couple years, you know, we haven't run it as well on first and second down in those first 28 minutes. And so I think you're seeing the difference in what our evolution is going to be with the backs that we have on the roster now in Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard.
Yeah.
Both excellent receivers and both excellent pass protectors. Mm-hmm. And with Will Levis and with adding Calvin Ridley to DeAndre Hopkins and Treylon Burks and some of the other receivers that we have. I mean, that's what we're going to look like. Now, I mean, we're not going to throw 82% of the time.
Sure.
But it is going to be, I think, a significant enough difference that people will be able to understand how we're changing the offense and why this was a good time to let Derrick Henry walk and why this was a good time to hand the keys to Will Levis and why this was a good time to, you know, to go out and make the deal for Calvin Ridley that we did.
Yeah, and I mean, you're mentioning the offense and the amount of times we did throw first and second down. And the whole idea now, I mean, in my estimation, and it has been for the last year or so, is you want to be a little more unpredictable. And what that does is soften up that defense a little bit and puts them on their heels a little bit. And maybe, you know, listen, when you see Derrick Henry in the backfield, you get a good understanding that there's a darn good chance Derrick's going to be handed this football. Now, this year, like you mentioned, we're going to have Pollard and you're going to have Spears, and you've got a young gun quarterback there who can, as we've seen, throw that ball, you know, 65 yards on a dime. To be a little less predictable will be refreshing in that sense. So we're looking forward to it. You mentioned Pollard. So in free agency, Mike, you know, Cushenberry at the center spot. You got Pollard. You grabbed Ridley. Legarius Sneed is the one that made all the headlines. Awuzie. Again, on another exciting and refreshing note, I loved watching the free agency this year for the Titans. They spent the money, Mike.
We had the money.
Exactly, but we spent it. We did it.
That was the whole thing, and you know, I've told the story more than once, and I apologize if you've heard it, but you know, we were the original franchise in 1994 that had to break up the band because we had not prepared for the salary cap. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the people in Houston didn't believe it was going to happen, or if they were just trying to keep the group together. The Oilers went to the playoffs with Warren Moon at quarterback and that whole group of receivers and the guys on defense and everything. They went to the playoffs seven straight years, 87 through 93. Well, the salary cap comes in 94. They're not ready for it, and so they have to sell off all the parts and start over. And where we have been in the last 30 years is we would catch up, and we'd have some money, and we'd go out and sign a couple free agents, and then we'd get good, and then we'd try to keep the team together as much as we could, and then we'd have to break the whole team up and start over. And then we got good for a couple years, and then we were not so good for about 8 years, and then we got good again. We had six straight winning seasons, And in the six straight winning seasons, we would, you know, sign our best players and try to add some other parts. So our whole thing, I mean, this time last year, we didn't have any cap room.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, we had some, yeah. But I mean, it wasn't $75 million. This was the first time this never happened, ever. And, you know, it was funny because we all knew in November and December when the season wasn't going well, we didn't have enough good players. And we understood we were going to be able to fix some of that in free agency because we had so much money. And that's exactly what they've done. They've gone out, spent the money, I think spent it judiciously. We still have money. We're not done in free agency, I predict. Won't be as splashy as Calvin Ridley, but we'll add some more pieces that will make us better. And it's fun. I mean, this is my 27th offseason with the team, and I've surely never seen anything like this. So it's been great.
It has been great. It's been, like I said, refreshing to see them out there, you know, with the shopping cart and putting the goods in there. Now, again, there's never a guarantee, and you know that, Mike. We know that these free agents, and we've seen it through the years, no matter who they sign with, there's no guarantees. But it is nice to see them putting it all together and trying to address a lot of these issues. Now, that rolls us forward. Yeah.
From a fan perspective, I mean, as a fan, you love this because this is a team that I think a lot of us thought, okay, this is probably going to be a rebuilding, so this isn't going to be the offseason they make the big splash, but you know, they're going all in, and as a fan, that's such, you know, so great to see that they have the opportunity to go all in and they're doing it.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good point. You know, it's a good point. There's hope there.
Absolutely.
There's a hopeful nature when your team goes out and does this. And I think that's great for the fan base. But the other part of it, too, is how we have signed guys. Like, the first guy we went after was Lloyd Cushenberry, the center from Denver. And here is an ascending player in the league, 26 years old. Mm. And he's going to be in the middle of our line for the next 4 years. And that he's a foundational type of player. Chido Owuze, a foundational type of corner. Legarius Sneed, you've signed guys. Like last year, we went out and signed guys for 1 year because that's what we could afford.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, a lot of those guys are not back. And it's either because they didn't play quite well enough or they just didn't, you know, because we do have new systems coming in or whatever, but it was almost like we were patching holes. Mm. And what we've done in free agency this year doesn't feel like that. It feels like, hey, we're just better.
Yeah, I agree. I think these moves make this team a lot better. I mean, obviously on paper, and then we hope that translates onto the field. It rolls us forward now, Mike. Mike Keith joining us here on Triple Play Sports Pub with Phil Tucker, Elijah Jacobs, and myself, Kenny Mann. It rolls us forward to a couple of weeks from now, which is the NFL draft. The Titans hold the 7th pick. You know, again, the mock draft thing, you can go crazy with that. The Titans' needs, we know what they are. I'll just say it this way, and I'll ask you this. Would you be surprised if that 7th pick is not Joe Alt, a wide receiver, or traded back? If any of those three, would you be surprised if it was not any of those three?
Yes, okay. Probably so.
Yeah.
Probably so. I mean, I could see going with the top edge rusher in Dallas Turner,
sure,
from Alabama. I could see Terry and Arnold, the corner from Alabama, potentially. It doesn't feel as likely where you've invested your resources this year in free agency. Mm. I think I would be surprised. Not shocked, but
sure.
I think I would be surprised. Yes.
All right. No Titans here. Other than Caleb Williams, I mean, is that a lock in your mind? It's a lock in my mind. Is it a lock
mind?
Yeah.
It's
hey,
a lock.
Who do you think's two, Mike? I'm curious.
Ah, that's the question.
Do you think Washington trades out of that, or
do you feel that they say we want? No, no, no.
Well, are you a Harbaugh guy? Have you bought into the it might be J.J. McCarthy?
Could be.
Okay.
I mean, it could be any of those three guys. I think they're I think they're going to sit and be as tight with it as they possibly can be. I think it could be Daniels. I think it could be May. Yeah. I think it could be McCarthy. But no, they're picking. They have to pick. Yeah. Because they, I mean, when you traded Sam Howell, you put yourself in a position where you had to pick. Mm-hmm. And so that's what they're doing.
Are we going to see four quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4?
Could.
Yeah. Very possible.
I think it's possible you could even see six quarterbacks go in the first 20.
Isn't that something? So you're adding, obviously, Bo Nix and I'm assuming Michael Penix into this.
I think it's possible.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, those guys, especially Penix, boy, he looked the part. Now, you take the age and you take the injuries and all of that, but my goodness, he looked like a plug-and-play mm-hmm. starter in this league, and there will be a team that falls in love with that. It happens. Okay. Mike Keith, by the way, is now on X Twitter, whatever it is. I'm glad to see. That's so much fun to see. I get to see Mike and all that fun stuff. Are you enjoying
Thanks
that, Mike?
I am. Yeah. It's at it. 10 Voice, at TENN Voice. And that's also me on Instagram.
Look at you.
I've gone crazy.
I know,
right?
And you've got like the Miami Vice look going, which I've been very impressed with.
Not as of today.
Not today?
What? I shaved it last night.
Oh, you see, I was all into the Miami Vice look.
Hey, if you watch the video today, Coach Mack and I put a video out this afternoon, and people are like, hey, what's different about you? I'm like, I'm taller.
Well, that's great. I'm just glad to see that you're out there. It's enjoyable. Like I said, all the content that you and Coach Mack bring to the fans, it's fantastic. We love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Elijah, did you have anything for Mike?
Yeah, I got a quick question,
what
Mike.
Do you got?
Two questions. Do you think, because Bill Callahan is also bringing his father along with
Brian Callahan.
Bring in Bill Callahan.
Hey, Elijah, I've already done that myself, so don't feel
bad.
I called Brian Bill one day.
Do you think this is going to be a massive positive impact on the offensive line as a whole to bring one of the better offensive line coaches in the history of the league?
I think it's one of our top two acquisitions of the offseason.
Awesome. That's kind of what I was thinking too.
I think it's I'm not saying that he's going to go down to Kroger and find five guys and suddenly we've got a great offensive line. I think he's going to take the talent we already have, put it in the best spots and develop it. He got Cushenberry. Mm-hmm. He got Sadiq Charles. Those were two players he clearly wanted. We'll add a lineman or two in the draft, could add another free agent lineman in the process. But what Bill Callahan is number one, he knows what he wants. Number two, he knows his son's scheme. Mm-hmm. So he understands what he understands what he needs physically, and he understands what he needs scheme wise from the players. And then the other part of it too, is he's a master teacher.
Yes.
He's what Dave McGinnis was as a linebacker coach. He's what Mike Munchak was as an offensive line coach. These are – it's like a master craftsman or a master chef or whatever. These guys are different level. Mm-hmm. And so we will be an offensive line that will function as one. Mm-hmm. Now, does it occur – game one. I don't know about that. Okay. I mean, this is what I've seen of new staffs and new teams and things like this. It sometimes takes a month. You know, it can be different. And that may be what the case is for us. But listen, he is really that good. He is, it is no hype. It is no over dramatization. It's the real thing. Bill Callahan is the best offensive line coach in ball. Mm-hmm. And our offensive line wasn't very good last year, so we will clearly be better this year. And remember this, too. Your offense itself has to help your offensive line. Mm-hmm. Your quarterback has to help your offensive line. Your receivers and your backs. What Kenny was talking about earlier, not being as predictable. Mm-hmm. Teams were able to get after us because we had third and 10. I mean, that I don't care if you got the greatest offensive line in the history of the game. If you're running 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 12, 3rd and 15, there's going to be pressure on the quarterback because they're going to be able to match up, come up with numbers. There are things that they can do. So we've got to be, you know, if we're more balanced, if we're less predictable, our offensive line will automatically be better. But it'll automatically be better next week, the next week, and the next week, and on forward to training camp, and so on and so forth, because of Bill Callahan.
Awesome. One other question I got, and this is about the draft. Do you think Joe Alt or Marvin Harrison Jr., if you could take either one of the two, which would you prefer?
Well, I talk on the radio, so I take the receiver. Are you kidding? I mean, come on.
Well, Mike, I'm come up with a thing for a pancake, you know, a block.
Yeah, I don't see that. You know, I see that after the fact. Here's what we don't know, and I've been talking about this some on some of the quick videos that we've done, and that is you have to draft for the foundation of the franchise. Mm-hmm. You're not drafting for the needs of week one, because, guys, our hope is that we're not picking 7th next year.
Yeah.
So what we want in the 7th pick is we want a guy who comes in and pretty quickly is one of our 12 very best players.
Yeah.
We want a showstopper. Now, is Joe Alt that potentially? Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What does Bill Callahan think of him? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So for all we know, Joe Alt may be the highest graded prospect in the offensive line that Bill Callahan has ever graded. Mm-hmm. Could be. If he is, draft him. Mm-hmm. You know? Because suddenly he's one of your 12 best players for a long, long time. That's a great pick. If Marvin Harrison is there, I know a lot more about him because I watched Ohio State play and I can watch the receivers because most of us follow the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have no idea what the traits of a great left tackle are. I know he's big and he's athletic. That sounds good to me. I couldn't tell you anything about hand placement, mm-hmm. about kick start, about any of that. I can tell you a lot more about a receiver who's 6'3", 210, and his dad's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. And there were some people that were saying that when he came out of high school, he had enough know-how and athletic skill that he could have gone straight to the NFL. So you have just asked me a loaded question, yeah. which I don't mind. I would ask me that too if I were you. That's totally fair.
I mean, I myself, I'm big Ohio State fan, so I would love it if the Titans had Marvin Harrison Jr. And plus,
I don't think he's good to us.
Yeah, he might not be there at 6.
Yeah.
He's going 4.
Yeah, and Brian Callahan's been in that organization. They were in this position before. You know, it's Jamar Chase, it's Penei Sewell, and the Bengals went with Jamar Chase, so they went with the weapon. You know, so we'll see if history repeats itself. Who's going to be there? Maybe Neighbors is there. Who knows? All right, Mike.
Love Neighbors.
What is your favorite sport beside football? I always keep meaning to ask you this. When you're not involved in football, what sport do you go to and go, yeah, that's what I want to watch?
Baseball.
Oh, there you go. What are you a fan of? What team?
The Yankees.
Oh, I love how much more love I just gained from Mike Keith. How fantastic. Mike, we're 10-2. I mean, it's fantastic. Life is good right now as a Yankee fan. I'm having a great time.
When I joined you guys, I just looked. It was nothing, top of the third. So
it's okay.
I follow it. I mean, it was my grandfather's favorite team starting in the 20s.
Oh, wow.
Because they would come north from Florida, and they would stop on the train, and they would play an exhibition game in Knoxville because the owner of the Yankees – Colonel Rupert and whomever it was that owned the Knoxville team were friends, and they would play a game. And my grandfather would get up in a tree outside the stadium, climb up a hill, whatever it was he did. And he didn't have any money to go pay to be there, but he would watch them.
That's fantastic.
And that was Garrick and Ruth and Dickie and Lazari and, you know, all of them. And so my dad was a giant fan of the Yankees too. And it's my outlet. It's my sport that I follow just still as a sports fan. This, you know, that I mean, I went to Tennessee, so I follow Tennessee sports passionately.
Right.
But just my outlet is Major League Baseball and the New York Yankees.
Who's your favorite player?
Don Mattingly.
He's a great guy.
He's my favorite player. So I have in my memorabilia room, I have a Don Mattingly card that I treasure. Yeah, Donnie Baseball was my guy growing up, and that he never got the chance, other than the one playoff game with the Mariners, that he never got the chance to show that to the world always killed me. But Donnie Baseball, had he not hurt his back, I wish he was in the Hall of Fame. He's not. I know the numbers don't equate because of the amount of time he played, but my goodness, if you knew, and obviously Mike does know this, I'm not telling him anything he doesn't know. If you watched baseball during that time frame with Mattingly and Winfield, Don Mattingly was the best player in Major League Baseball for a couple of years. I mean, he was by far the best player there was.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's a nice guy, too.
And a nice guy.
He's a really nice guy. I met him at a golf tournament and totally made a fool out of myself because I met him and somebody said, "Hey, Don, this is Mike Keith." And he's like, "Oh, hey, so nice to meet you. My son and I come down to the Titans games from Evansville."
Wow.
And I said, hi, Don. Hi. I mean, it was the most pathetic. I mean, it was just so embarrassing because no words would come out, just sounds.
That's fantastic.
I had something for him to sign. He goes, "Oh, would you like me to sign that? I'm happy to." I was like, I mean, it was just so. It was so bad. It was like a high moment and a low moment all at the same time. But he was phenomenally gracious, and you know, I thought he and Mariano Rivera to me.
Oh my goodness!
Signify what a Yankee. Signify what a Yankee is all about to me.
Yeah, I tell these guys here, and they get, you know, to the point where it's ad nauseum. I tell them, you know, that I used to go to the Yankee games in New York and, you know, the old stadium and then the new stadium and whatnot. But the memory I treasure the most was a Yankee Red Sox game. And this was regular season, by the way. And Mariano came in from the pen and Enter Sandman came on and the 56,000 plus, and we were in the upper deck. It was palpable, the feeling, the emotion, it's an incredible thing that I in any sporting event I've ever been in, I've never equated it again to Mariano coming out of that pen to that music against the Red Sox. It was amazing. And I miss those days, the Yankees Red Sox rivalry. I really do. I mean, I know it'll get going again at some point, but that was a lot of fun.
Well, my first thing each morning when I wake up is, did the Yankees win and did the Red Sox lose?
That's great.
If that happens, I mean, like they lost to Baltimore. They lost to Baltimore yesterday, and you know it would have been better for the Yankees had Baltimore lost, but I don't care.
That's right.
So that's what I mean. I'm still a fan that way.
That's great.
Kind of a sick, troubled fan.
That's fantastic.
Who roots for other people's misery for my own.
Well, that's the old Yankee. That's the Yankee way. My favorite team's the Yankees and whoever's playing the Red Sox. You know that.
The evil empire, baby.
That's right. I don't mind. I embrace it. It's fine.
I thought you would have liked whoever played the Mets, Kenny.
The Mets are the little brother. I don't even bother with the Mets. It's little brother. It doesn't bother me. All right, listen.
That's not real.
I know. Exactly. I mean, come on. All right, let's get Mike out of here on a couple of fun things. He knows I'm going to give him some fun things. All right, Mike, you ready? I asked this last week of Pete Weber. It was very interesting. All right, the food, Mike, that I would pick or you would pick to have no calories, meaning you can eat this food now to your heart's content the rest of your life. What food would you pick to issue no calories to?
Breakfast food.
Anything in particular?
I could eat. I mean, just, I mean, the biscuits, bacon, eggs, sausage, pancakes, waffles. I mean, just anything like that, covered in chocolate.
Chocolate.
How about pancakes? No, not really.
But the whole thing. I could eat breakfast every meal of the day.
Biscuits. I mean, that alone. The calories in a biscuit. All right. Which is worse and why, Mike? Which is worse and why? This is three choices. You always, I'll make it 1 year. Always for 1 year, you have to wear damp socks. Or you wear one sock only. You only get to wear one. Or you get to wear both socks, but there's a pebble in your shoe at all times. Which would be worse for you out of those three?
Oh, I think the wet socks.
Wet socks.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, but wet socks.
You too, Elijah? Yeah, the wet socks would do you in.
Terrible.
All right, fair enough. All right, last one. Which is better, Mike? Which is better? Your pet, whichever it is, or pets that you have, they speak to you, but they can't understand anything you say at all. So telling them to sit means nothing. Telling them to go means nothing. Or they understand everything you say, but can't speak.
Oh, they understand everything that I say but can't speak.
That would be better?
That would be much better.
Don't you want to know, though? Do you have a dog or a cat?
We have dogs.
Okay,
so
don't you want to know?
Retrievers.
Wouldn't it be great if they could speak to you one day? Like, you come home and he's like, hey.
Not really.
Hey, Dad, that was a great broadcast.
I don't even want members of my family to speak to me. I just want to be left alone.
I know Mike makes a good.
I just want to go in a dark room and be left alone.
Yeah, Mike makes a good point. I didn't think of it that way. Can you imagine coming home and you get through the whole family part of the whole day? How was your day? Okay, how was your? And then here comes the dogs. You know, hey, Mike. Hey, Dad. What's going on? Oh my gosh.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah,
you can tell a dog's personality.
Yeah.
Do you want that energy talking at you as soon as you walk in the door?
Yeah, you're right. It'll never stop. You're absolutely right.
And you can tell a cat's energy. Do you want his energy talking to you? Like, what the?
The cats are so indifferent. They don't even care. Exactly. They're like, whatever. I didn't even know you were home. Exactly. You know, that's what they'd be like. All right. Well, listen.
They pretty much do, right? They pretty much tell you what they think.
They do.
That's true.
All right. Listen, what a great time we've had. What can I say? As always, thank you so much, Mike Keith, voice of the Tennessee Titans. And he's on X, and he's on Instagram, and he's everywhere, and minus the Miami Vice beard, which I actually liked. But we appreciate so much. Well, you know, the Crockin' and I thought maybe
Crockin
you and
Tubbs.
I thought you and Coach Mac were going to go with it. Crockin' and Tubbs, maybe they have the neon jacket on next time. I don't know. I thought it'd be exciting.
You know, I walked in last night and I decided it was over. you just decide. Sometimes you just decide. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm out.
My wife went,
why did you do that? I'm like, I don't know.
So she liked the Miami Vice look.
She never says. She never says.
Well, listen.
I don't even know if she likes me. I'm not 100% sure that's the case. So I'm not really going to. I'm not going to sort of dig into that.
You don't push.
I may not like the answer. No.
You don't push. You just go with the, okay, that's nice, dear. I'll shave. I
34
won't shave.
Years I'm still here.
There you
here,
go.
So.
Fantastic. All right, listen. Mike, thank you so, so much. We appreciate every time you've come on. We enjoy having you, and we absolutely we're thrilled. We're thrilled anytime you come on. We appreciate it. And Phil, anything say, you know, that –
No, I think we covered it.
Right.
Yeah.
So Phil Tucker, Elijah Jacobs, myself, Kenny Mann, we thank so much, Mike Keith, for spending time with us. And we're going to touch base again, and we'll have hopefully Mike back on again. Maybe right before the season starts, it'd be a great time.
Yeah, let's
and
do
we'll,
that.
We'll do
let's
it do all it. Again. Mike Keith, voice of the Tennessee Titans, right here on Triple Play Sports. Thank you so much, Mike. All right, welcome back in to Triple Play Sports, WQKR, sponsored by Planet Fitness. We thank Mike Keith, the voice of the Tennessee Titans, for spending, oh my gosh, about 35, 40 minutes with us. We are honored, as always, to have him. We're so happy to have him as a friend of the show. And as I mentioned, we'll have Mike back on maybe right before the season starts. And we'll know what this team looks like then after the draft and whatnot.
There's still so many questions to be answered in a couple weeks.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so guys, I asked Mike, I'll get to you guys quickly, the which is worse and why? Damp socks, one sock, or pebbles in your shoe? What would be worse for you?
The pebbles a close second, but the wet socks for me would be the worst.
If it was no wet socks, if it was just pebble or one sock only you can wear?
The pebble.
That's worse?
I could deal with one sock.
Wet socks is the worst.
Without the wet socks, what would it be if you had to pick the other two?
It would be the Pebble.
You didn't want the Pebble?
No, the Pebble would be the worst.
That would be worse?
Yeah.
I think one sock would be, I don't know, that'd be so odd. One sock, it just would feel very odd.
It would feel odd, but not as odd as wet socks. I mean, that would just feel horrible. Like, yeah. As you're walking.
Well, the Pebble just seems so annoying.
Well, I mean, I can't even stand it. Like, I'm getting ready in the morning and there's something, you know, a little bit of water on the floor, like someone dropped an ice cream or something. If I step in it, I go change my socks before I even leave the house. I can't even stand just that little dot of wet.
Which is worse and why? Sports. I'll get you guys, and we'll end on this. Having to play the Predators in the NHL playoffs or having to play the Lightning in the NHL playoffs. Very, very parallel issue here in both the East and the West. The Preds, by far the hottest team in the last month in the NHL, 3 games left. They're going to be playing someone. And believe me, that team is probably going to say, gosh, this is the last thing we wanted. And whether it be Boston or the Rangers or whoever, someone's going to have to face the Lightning. And there's a veteran team there. Which one's worse to have to face in the opening round?
I'd have to say it's worse to face the Lightning.
Okay.
As much as I love the Preds, I love how they're playing, I think there's something to be said for the experience that the Lightning have, mm-hmm. as opposed to this Predators team. I mean, this Predators team, they don't have a ton of depth of experience in the playoffs right now.
Sure.
But that Lightning team, they've been there.
They have. Elijah, which is worse?
This is close. Yeah. Both are for two different reasons. But I'm going to also say the Lightning because I just feel this is a championship team. And then when they didn't win the championship, they were a team you had to get through to get there. So I'm going to say the Lightning. And Vasilevsky in the playoffs is one of the best playoff goalies ever. I mean, I think he either has the record or he's right there in shutouts in the playoffs. So I think that is dangerous. So I'm going to say the Lightning.
I'm going to say the Preds. Now, here's why. And I love the Lightning. I do. And I love those players. And don't get me wrong. I think they're both terrible teams to have to play. But for every, if you want to call the Lightning a mini dynasty, I think they are, there's always an end.
That's true.
There's always a finality at some point. Whether it be a first round exit 1 year, and then they finally go, all right, we're going to break up the band, but guys. And with a good team, there's always a beginning.
Mm.
So I feel, now, if it's the Avs, I may feel different. But if the Preds play either the Stars or the Canucks, I would not want to play the Preds. They're a hungry, young
Lion,
group mixed with some veterans. We have Yossi, we have Saros, you know, we have Forsberg, who overachieved, who need to be told you shouldn't be here. I like that.
I like it too.
You know, but don't get me wrong, you're both right, and there's no wrong answer here. The Lightning, I don't want to play them either. But if it's a razor's edge, but I don't want to play this Predators team. I don't want to do it.
Well, if it's the Avalanche, that's the outlier.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I feel like that's just a bad matchup for anybody because of you got the two-way player, you got the elite scorer. I mean, that's a tough out.
It absolutely is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
The other thing about the Lightning I was going to add is Vasi is healthy.
Yeah.
He was not healthy last year, and I think that kind of halted their overall run. He has played only about half the season, so I think him being healthy going into the playoffs is also dangerous. That's another aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we mentioned this before, and we'll get into the NHL playoffs next week because they'll be set. I hate to keep saying it, but, you know, a hot goalie wins a series. It happens. You know, it may not win you a Stanley Cup, but it'll win you a series or two. Mm-hmm. You get the right guy that makes the, you know, just he's an acrobat for 7 games. It's hard to beat them. And it's a great equalizer. Mm-hmm. You know, you can come across like the Toronto Maple Leafs with Matthews may end up with 70 goals. Now he can go into the playoffs and play a team with a hot goalie and get shut out for 4 games. So it absolutely happens. It'll be a lot of fun. Anything else? Anybody?
I think that wraps it up.
Great show again here at the Triple Play Sports Pub. And like I said, next week we'll touch on the NBA and NHL playoffs and where we're heading with that and the matchups there.
And we'll look forward to having another great week in sports.
Yes, we will.
Absolutely.
We'll have that all next week. This has been Triple Play Sports. For Kenny and Elijah, this is Phil Tucker saying join us again next week.